March the 22nd in the year 2012, and we are in the full moon meditation hall of the new hamlet, Plum Village. In Plum Village, our practice is always to go back to the present moment and get in touch with the present moment as deeply as possible. And we do that in many ways, like breathing. If we breathe mindfully, we touch the present moment. And not only we can touch the present moment, but we can touch everything that is going on in that present moment. So mindful breathing is one of the wonderful practices that we can learn in Plum Village. Usually, when we do not practice, we may allow ourselves to be carried away by our thinking about the past or in the future. And if our mind is lost in the past or in the future, we are not truly alive. And that is why mindful breathing helps us to go home to the here and the now, in order to touch life and all the wonders. So the practice of mindful breathing is very crucial, very important. And that is why the sutra on mindful breathing is considered to be one of the most important sutras that we have to learn. In that sutra, there are 16 exercises that help us to fully live in depth the present moment. The present moment is time, but time includes the space. And if we get in touch with time, we get in touch with space and everything. And then we have the practice of mindful walking. When we walk, we are allowed our mind to be in the here and the now. And we bring our attention to our steps. And we touch the earth mindfully. And if we touch the earth mindfully with every step, we touch the present moment. And we touch also space. And touching the present moment, touching the earth, touching the sky, touching the cosmos with one step. We feel alive, we feel we are truly living our life. We are not lost in the past or in the future. So breathing and walking are two very simple and yet important practices that we learn in Plum Village. Therefore, if we have a chance to be in Plum Village for 1 week or two, we should be able to master the practice of mindful breathing, mindful walking. And then when we go home, we can continue, always. For Thay, the practice of mindful breathing has helped him a lot. He has gone through many difficult situations, and he always get out of this situation thanks to the practice of mindful breathing. Mindful breathing is available to us if we know how to practice, and then that is a friend. It is your second body. Wherever you go, your second body is there. And if you need him, you need her, and then he or she will be there for you. When you are in danger, when you get lost, when you do not know what to do, it is your second body, the mindful breathing, that will help you, show you the way. Always go back to him, to her, your second body. Your mindful breathing. That is the Buddha. The Buddha, not in abstract terms, but the Buddha as a friend, as the Dharma, the living Dharma, not the spoken Dharma, not the written Dharma, but the living Dharma. When is it like this? You may be aware that you are sitting on earth. We know that the earth is a great bodhisattva. The earth is not something material. The earth is a living thing, an organism, because the earth produces flowers, beautiful mornings, beautiful evenings. The earth has brought to life many Buddhas, many saints, many bodhisattvas. The earth has produced our ancestors, our father and mother. The earth has produced us. The earth is a real living bodhisattva. So we are sitting on the earth. And we are not sitting just on a small parcel of the earth. We are sitting on the whole earth. So with mindfulness, you can touch the earth in its entirety. The one who touches, then the one who is touched, they are one. You are the earth, and the earth is you. The earth is in you. You have to see the earth, Mother Earth, in you. And you are in the Mother Earth. Because the Mother Earth is not only earth, Mother Earth is also air. Mother Earth is also water. Mother Earth is also heat. And we are inside of Mother Earth. There is no need to touch because we are Mother Earth. Touching is a way of saying. And if we realize that truth, if we have that vision that we are the earth is us, and then you can transcend birth and death. You are no longer afraid of birth and death. Because birth and death are just manifestation, are just notions. Deep in the teaching, we know that there is no birth and no death. And when you contemplate a cloud or anything, we'll be able to touch the nature of no birth and no death in the cloud or in anything. It's not too important for our intellect to understand that a cloud can never die. To die means from something you become nothing. From the realm of being, you pass into the realm of non-being. And that is not the case of the cloud. You cannot kill a cloud. You can make the cloud disappear into nothingness. Because a cloud can become something like snow, or hail, or rain, or ice. But a cloud can never become nothing. It goes very well with the declaration of scientists that nothing is created, nothing died. Scientists with their intellect are capable of seeing that nothing is born, nothing, died. Lavoisier said that rien ne se crée, rien ne se perd. Nothing is created, nothing can disappear. Everything is changing. So the cloud has not come from the realm of non-being to the realm of being. Before being a cloud, the cloud had been something else. So the cloud has not come from the realm of non-being. And if we see that, if we see the nature of no birth and no death of the cloud, we are free from the notion of birth and death, and we are also free from the notion of being and non-being. Because the notion of being and non-being is a product, is something of the mind, that is something linked to the notion of birth and death. If there is no birth and no death, and then the idea of being and non-being become meaningless. Therefore, we know that to be or not to be, that is no longer the question. The teaching of the Buddha is very practical, and sometimes it tend to see it as a declaration on metaphysical declaration. It's like in the sutra of the better way to live alone, the Buddha said that go back to the present moment and leave the present moment deeply. The past is no longer there, and the future is not yet there. So that is very practical. That is not a metaphysical declaration. It is a very practical advice, so that you do not get lost in the past or get lost in the future, so that you can touch the present moment. And why you touch the present moment, you touch life and all the wonders in the present moment. That is what the Buddha wanted to say. He did not want to say that the past did not exist, do not exist, does not exist, and the future does not exist. Only the present moment exists. He was not talking about metaphysics. He was talking about practical things. That if you go home to the here and the now, you touch life and all the wonders. He did not want to discuss about whether the past exists or the future exists or the present exists. So we should not speculate about his teaching as metaphysics. So there is a school of Buddhism called Sutrantika, Kinh Lượng Bộ, who stick to the scriptures. It's good to stick to the scriptures. If you allow yourself to fly too high in the realm of metaphysical speculation, you might lose the teaching. So there are schools of Buddhism who, that go very deep into the realm of systematic Dharma, and that has produced a lot of works called Abhidharma, the super Dharma. Abhidharma is the super Dharma. And there are many works produced by many schools of Buddhism, and that become a very imposing amount of literature called the Abhidharma literature, the literature of the super Dharma. And there's a lot of analyzing, submitting things. And they call it Super Dharma, Abhidharma. And the reaction of the other school, Sutrantika, means I stick to the sutras. I stick to what the Buddha said. I do not venture too much in the realm of metaphysical speculation. But sticking to the sutra may be good or may not be good. Because if you are caught by a word, you lose the teaching. Suppose you say that the Buddha said, only the present moment is. The past is not. Does not exist. The future doesn't exist. That is also speculation. The intention of the Buddha is not to discuss about the existence of the past, or the future, or the present moment. The intention of the Buddha is that you wake up and you be alive, you become alive. If you touch life in the here and the now, you see? So sticking to the scriptures might not be good. So there is one school of Buddhism called Sakvastivada that teaches that everything exists, even the past and the future. So according to that school of Buddhism, that existed about 1,000 years in Kashmir. And that school had produced a lot of literature, including a huge treaty on Abhidharma called Vibhasa, Tibhasa, Tibhasa Lung. And that school of Buddhism, Hubo, confirmed that not only the present moment exists, but the past exists and the future also exists. Past, present, and future, they are the same thing, but they play different roles, but they are the same. Dhammatatra, one of the doctors of the school, said that suppose you have a piece of gold, and that piece of gold can be made into a necklace, a ring, a ear. So the three kind of ornaments, the three kind of things are different, but three of them are gold. So the three times, although they look different, the past, the future, the present, but they are the same. So that is one of the ways to say that the past, the future, the present, they exist. And then another doctor called Gosha Yuam, who said that, well, it's like a post, like a secretary, or like a president. That always exists, but that can be served by a different person, three person. If one person serves in that post and is gone, and the second person come and replace him, and the third person come and replace the second, so the same post, but there are three persons. So past, present, future, although they look three different things, but they are the same thing. And there is a third doctor of the school, his name is Vasumitra Tehu. He said that, well, it is the number one. Number one can stay alone and play the role of one. And the number one can stay together with number zero, become 10. Number 1 can stay with 2 zero, become 100. But 1 or 10 or 100 look different, but 1 is always 1. And that is another way of describing three times, past, present, and future. And the last one, the last doctor is Buddha Deva, Yat Thien. He said that, well, it's like a woman, the same woman, but when she was young, she was a daughter. And then she married, she became a wife. And when she gave birth to a child, she became a mother. So daughter, wife, and mother, although they look different, but they are the same person. So the three times are one. So that is too much on speculation. According to the teaching of interbeing, we know that the past, the present, and the future are, first of all, our ideas, our notions. Because the past and the future cannot be two different things. Because the notion of the past should lean on the notion of the future in order to be born. Like the notion of left and right. If there is no right, there is no left. That is interbeing. If there is no birth, there is no death. If there is no past, there is no future. That is the teaching of interbeing. So if we say that only the present exists, there is no past, there is no future, this does not seem right. Because the present moment is just a notion. And that notion cannot be born unless there is the notion of past, there is notion of the future. So interbeing is a very wonderful way in order to look at things. And you can imagine that there is a block of time called the past, there's a block of time called future, and the present moment is just the separation between the past and the future. It's hard to grasp the past. It's difficult to run and to grasp the past. It's like the wind. You cannot grasp the wind. It's very difficult. It's impossible to grasp the future into your hand. And it looks like we can touch, we can grasp the present moment. But that is not so easy. The present moment is fleeting. As far as you look at it, it becomes the past. As far as you, as soon as you touch the present moment, it becomes the past right away. And you, who is trying to touch, you also like that, because as soon as you touch the present moment, you are no longer the same person. So things are fleeting. And that is why in the tradition of Zen, we say that the mind of the past, you cannot get it. The mind of future, you cannot get it. And the mind of present, you cannot get it either. Quá khứ tâm bất khả đắc, hiện tại tâm bất khả đắc, vị lai tâm bất khả đắc, ungraspable. If you try to grasp, it's impossible. So metaphysics are trying to grasp something, and our scientists also are trying to grasp reality as something graspable. And in the Heart Sutra that we chanted this morning, you cannot grasp anything. Thank you. there is no attainment. You cannot attain anything. You cannot grasp anything. You cannot possess anything when you have the notion, the intention to get something. So the vision of intervening help us not to divide things, not to analyze things, not to think of anything as having a separate existence. If the past does not have a separate existence, it has to learn on the future in order to be the past. The same thing is true with the future, and it is true with the present moment. You cannot grasp the present moment. You should know that the present moment should base herself on the past and the future in order to manifest. Last Sunday, we talked about the touching eternity. The notion of eternity is possible because of another notion, the notion of the instant, of the moment. So eternity goes always with the instant, with the moment. And that is why there is the teaching that if you can get in touch with the moment deeply, you can get in touch with eternity. Eternity can be seen in an instant, can be touched in an instant. Why? Because these two things, they are not separate. They coexist, they inter-are, like the left and the right. Suppose you look at this sheet of paper, and we describe this as right, and this as left. And right and left lean on each other in order to be possible. You cannot take the right out of the left, and you cannot take the left out of the right. They cannot be separated. They inter-are, the right and the left. First of all, we think of them as opposite, as excluding each other. The right cannot be the left. The left cannot be the right. And that is why our way of thinking. But practically, we cannot remove the right from the left and the left from the right, and that we know that they are not really exclusive, they are inclusive. The right is in the left, and the left is in the right. And that is why touching the right, you have an opportunity to touch the left at the same time. And touching the moment deeply with mindfulness and concentration, you can touch also in the eternity. That is the higher training. With every breath, with every step, you can touch eternity. Because eternity is not outside of the moment, of the instant. So many of us practice breathing and walking. And by doing so, we try to touch the present moment and all the wonders of life so that we can be alive. We do not waste our life. But if we do it more deeply, we can touch eternity. And we may be free of the notion of birth and death. This morning, the brothers and the sisters, monastics, chanted Kamlo. Kamlo is Amrita. Amrita is the nectar of mortality. The nectar of immortality. Immortality means no birth and no death. In the realm of science, people begin to see that the notion of birth and death cannot be applied to reality. And we have the law called the law of conservation of energy, the law of conservation of matter. You cannot create new energy. You cannot create new matter. And you cannot destroy energy, make it into nothing. You cannot make matter disappear into nothingness. So the nature of energy as well as of matter is no birth and no death. Rien se crée, rien se perd. So Lavoisier has reproduced the teaching of the Buddha when he said, rien se crée, rien se perd, tout se transforme. He needs to say something else, a little bit more, and then it will be complete. It means nothing is born, nothing is created, there is no creation. From nothing, you cannot make something. So that removes the notion of creation, the notion of a beginning of being, coming from non-being. There is no beginning, there is no creation, there is no birth. And this is something stated by scientists, not by a spiritual practitioner. Rien ne se crée, nothing is created, nothing is born. It's like in the Heart Sutra this morning. Rien ne se perd. Nothing is lost. Nothing dies. There's no birth and there's no death. So as far as we can see, the law of conservation of energy and matter still valid. There's no birth and no death. This is a product of the intellect. And it is equivalent to no birth and no death. And then he said something else, tout se transforme. Everything changes, and that is true. And he mentioned the teaching of impermanence. Very Buddhist in that statement, scientific statement. There's no birth, there's no death. Everything is impermanent. And if he adds something like uh, rien n'a d'existence propre. It will be complete. Nothing has its private own existence. Nothing has nothing has a separate existence. Self nature. There is no self nature. Like when we look into a flower, we see a flower as a beautiful manifestation, a rose. But the rose does not have her own existence. The presence of the rose is own to the presence of non-rose elements. Because when you look into the rose, you can only see non-rose elements. It's like the soil. You can see the soil in the rose. The soil is not a rose. It is a non-rose element. And without that non-rose element, a rose is not possible. So the first thing you may see in the rose is the soil, a non-rose element. And then you look and you see the sunshine. The sunshine is not a rose, but without the sunshine, a rose is not possible. So the sunshine is another non-rose element. And then the rain, the cloud, that is also a non-rose element. And if you continue to look, there are a multitude of non-rose elements in the rose. And if you remove all these non-rose elements, there's no rose anymore. So the rose doesn't have her own existence. And that is called emptiness, emptiness of a separate existence. And if you look at the, and that does not mean that the rose does not exist. If you say that the rose doesn't exist, you are caught in the notion of non-being. This is a wrong view. And if you say that the rose exists as a separate entity, that is also a wrong view. The wrong view of being, the wrong view of non-being. A rose, she is free from both views, being and non-being. And the rose, her nature is no birth, no death also. It is like the cloud. You cannot reduce the rose into non-being. No. Rien ne se perd. Nothing dies. A rose is like a cloud. Her nature is no death, no birth and no death. So if Lavoisier had something like that, rien n'a d'existence propre, he also complete the teaching of the Buddha, interbeing. Interbeing does not mean being. Nothing can be by itself alone. Everything has to interbe. And you can see the nature of interbeing of the rose. You can see the nature of interbeing of the cloud. And when we look into ourselves, we see ourselves as a cloud, as a rose. We are made of non-us element. We see here elements like earth, like fire, like air, like water. We see elements like ancestors, culture, food, These are non-us elements. And if we remove all these non-us elements, we are no longer there. We are made of non-us elements. The same thing is true with the Buddha. A Buddha is made only of non-Buddha elements. And if you remove all the non-Buddha elements from him, he's no, he's will no longer there for you to bow to. So a Buddha is made of non-Buddha elements only. A rose is made of non-rose elements only. And you are made of non-you elements only. But that does not mean that you do not exist or you belong to the realm of non-being. No, you are free from the notion of being and non-being. You are free from the notion of birth and death. Your nature is no birth and no death. And that is why touching the here and the now, you touch the nature of interbeing and you transcend the notions of birth and death, being and non-being. And when we look at one thing like a cloud or a rose like that, we see the net. The net of interbeing. One thing contains everything else. One rose contains the whole cosmos. And you also, you contain the whole cosmos. And as soon as you see you as the whole cosmos, you can touch eternity. And you don't need to touch eternity because you are eternity already. When you come to Plum Village, you learn very simple and concrete things, like how to breathe, and how to walk, and how to sit. And that is an art. If you know how to breathe, to walk, and to sit, you can touch eternity. You can touch your nature of no birth and no death. But right away, we can achieve a number of things. First of all, when you breathe in mindfully, or when you make a step mindfully, you bring your mind back to the here and the now. And when mind and body are together, you can touch the present moment. You can touch the now and the here. And this can be possible right away. When you breathe in, you don't do anything else. You just breathe in. Your mind is focused just on your in-breath. Your mind releases the past, releases the future, releases your worries. And you can become free right away with just one in-breath. So the effect of the practice can be right there. If you are truly mindful, if you are truly concentrated on your in-breath, and that's why breathing in, you release the past, you release the future, you release your project. And freedom is there right away, provided that you are truly mindful, truly concentrated. Mindful of what? Mindful of your in-breath. Concentrated on what? Concentrated on your in-breath. So when breathing in, you just do one thing, just breathing in, and invest all of your body and your mind into breathing in. And that does not mean that you have to struggle a lot in order to breathe in, because breathing in can be very pleasant. Just allow yourself to breathe in mindfully and become alive. Because when you breathe in, you can touch the truth that you are alive. Because someone who is already dead cannot breathe in anymore. You are breathing in. It means you are alive. You touch the miracle of being alive. So don't underestimate your in-breath, the practice. Don't think that it's ABC in the practice. If you have enough mindfulness and concentration, one in-breath can help you touch the truth, can help you touch eternity and the nature of no birth and no death. You cannot say that breathing in is just for beginners. No, that's not true. If you have practiced 50 years, you still breathe in. And you still value your in-breath. That's my case. I think breathing in is the most wonderful thing to do. Every day and each moment, you become always alive, fully present in the here and now, and do not waste your life. So breathing in, you become alive. It's like to turn on the light. That light is mindfulness. Mindfulness allows you to be aware that you are there, and the cosmos is there, Mother Earth is there. It's time to enjoy the moment. So breathing in is not a hard labor. Breathing in should be a pleasure. And if you are a practitioner that is capable of enjoying your in-breath, you are a successful, you are a skillful practitioner. You enjoy your in-breath. You do not suffer when you breathe in. Why do we have to suffer breathing in? It's a wonderful thing. And you can enjoy your out-breath also. And you breathe in such a way that each in-breath and out-breath is for you to celebrate life, to celebrate the fact that you are alive. You are an artist. The real practitioner is an artist. She knows how to enjoy every moment of her life, breathing in, breathing out. And that is the first exercise in the Sutra of Mindful Breathing. And the second exercise is breathing in. I enjoy all my in-breath. I follow my in-breath from beginning to the end. Your in-breath may last 3 seconds or 4. And during that time, you enjoy totally your in-breath. There is no interruption. There is no thinking that intrudes and stop the course of your enjoyment. Breathing in, I follow my in-breath from the beginning to the end. Respire. Je suis mon inspiration dans tout son parcours. Only enjoyment. And that increases your capacity to be concentrated. You are fully concentrated on one thing, your inner. And it can produce more delight, more joy. And you don't struggle. You just enjoy. And if you enjoy your in-breath, you are a good practitioner. If you struggle breathing in, you have not succeeded. Why you have to struggle breathing in? Breathing in, breathing out, can do without, can be done without effort. It's like when the sun rises and you stand there and contemplate the beautiful sunrise. Do you have to make any effort in order to enjoy the sunrise? No. You just enjoy. If you are there, truly there in the here and now, just breathing in and now enjoy your sunrise. So the same thing is true with your in-breath. You don't have to struggle. You say that breathing in may be very pleasant, and you enjoy your in-breath and out-breath. And if you learn like that, practice like that 1 week, and then when you go home, it becomes a habit, and you continue to enjoy your in-breath and out-breath, even if you are walking in the railway station or in the compound of a supermarket. The third exercise of mindful breathing is breathing in, I'm aware of my whole body. And while breathing in, you recognize your body as something wonderful, as something offered to you by Mother Earth. Connecting with your body. In modern time, we are not with our body. We are very seldom with our body. We are lost in our thinking, in our work, in our computer. We forget that we have a body. And that is why you can program a bell of mindfulness in your computer so that every 15 minutes there will be the sound of the bell to remind you to stop and to breathe in and reconnect with your body. And many of our brothers and sisters in Plum Village, they do that. They have to use their computer, but they don't want to get lost. So every time they hear the bell from the computer, they stop thinking, they smile, they relax, they breathe in and out, they get in touch with the body, they get in touch with Mother Earth in their body. And that way, we can maintain our health. Because if we get alienated with Mother Earth, with our body, you get sick. Getting in touch deeply with our body, we get in touch with Mother Earth, with nature. And we can restore our balance. We can get the nourishment that we need. So we will not get sick. Walking from the parking lot into your office, you might like to do that. You might enjoy touching Mother Earth with every step. Why do you allow yourself to be carried away by the thinking and the worries? Walking from the parking lot to your office, you might like to enjoy your in-breath, your out-breath. You can walk slowly and you can program so that you have the time to enjoy every step from the parking lot to your office. You can very well arrange so that you have the time to walk as a free person, not being carried by your worries, your thinking and so on. And with every step, you are aware that this wonderful body, and every step you touch yourself and you touch Mother Earth. And each step is healing. Each step is nourishing. The third exercise, breathing in, I'm aware of my body. My body is a wonder. The present moment is full of wonders. And the first wonder that I touch is my in-breath. The fact that I am alive, the fact that I have a body. The present moment, this moment is full of wonders. And thanks to my practice of mindful breathing, I get in touch with the wonders of life in me and around me. And the fourth exercise of mindful breathing is to release the tension in the body. Breathing in, I'm aware of the tension in my body. Some pain in my body. Breathing out, I allow the tension in my body to be released. That can be possible while you drive your car, while you sit in front of your computer, while you walk from the parking lot to the office. You can always release the tension in your body. Sitting on a train, about to have your lunch, you may like to take a few moments in order to release the tension in your body. We have allowed the tension to be accumulated in our body, and that is the foundation of all kind of sickness. That is why this fourth exercise of mindful breathing recommended by the Buddha should be practiced every day, whenever possible, and also is pleasant. Sitting meditation. The first thing you do in sitting meditation is allow the attention in your body to go. Sit in an upright position. And yet there is no tension at all. You release all tension. You allow all the muscles in your face to be released. If you know how to breathe in and smile, the many muscles in your face will be released. And you allow muscles on your shoulder to be released. Because sitting meditation is doing nothing. You don't have anything to do. You have the time to enjoy yourself as a body, as a mind. Body and mind together, you just enjoy a few minutes of sitting and doing nothing. And sitting meditation should be pleasant, should be healing. So the first few minutes of sitting meditation should be used in order to release the tension in our body and to enjoy doing nothing. Just enjoy your in-breath and out-breath. And sitting meditation, if well done, can be healing, can be nourishing also. Sitting meditation, sitting and doing nothing, seems to be a luxury in our time. And you, if you can arrange, you can provide, you can afford yourself that kind of luxury. Sitting, doing nothing, just enjoy breathing and releasing the tension. And when you are able to release the tension in your body, you can reduce the amount of pain in your body. Because the tension can increase the pain. And you may pay attention to the spot in your body that has tension. And you focus your attention on that and help that spot in the body to release the tension. You are practicing love directed to your body. And that is the fourth exercise of mindful breathing recommended by the Buddha. Very practical. When you learn the fifth, exercise, you know that it is possible to generate a feeling of joy by breathing in. Breathing in, I feel joy. That is not auto-suggestion. That is not wishful thinking. Because breathing in, you can bring in a feeling of joy. Breathing in mindfully, you become aware of your body as a miracle. Breathing in, you can be aware that everything around you are miracles. Breathing in, you may realize that you are so lucky to have met the Dharma, to have an opportunity to practice, to enjoy the present moment. Breathing in, you might notice that you have many conditions of happiness that you may make use of in order to be happy right here and right now. So breathing in like that can bring a feeling of joy. It's like breathing in, I'm aware of my eyes. My eyes are already 85 years old, but they are still capable of seeing things. My eyes still capable of recognizing my friends, recognize him, recognize her. And to have eyes that can still see, that is wonderful. You know Galileo, who discovered the cosmos as something very huge. He lost his eyesight. And he wrote to his friend that although I am blind, but I am capable of seeing that the cosmos is beautiful and large and immense. So breathing in, you can get in touch with your eyes and know that you have eyes still in good conditions. And you can see all kinds of colors and forms around you. And there is a paradise of forms and colors. And that is mindfulness. And that brings the feeling of joy. And not only you can touch your eyes, but you can touch a multitude of things in yourself and around you that can serve as conditions of happiness. You are very lucky. We are very lucky. We have more conditions of happiness than we think. So breathing in with intelligence, with mindfulness, you can generate a feeling of joy. Joy at every moment is possible. If you are a good yogi, a good practitioner, you are capable of generating a feeling of joy at any moment you like. Whether you are walking or sitting or lying down, while looking or listening, you can always generate a feeling of joy. That is the fifth exercise of mindful breathing recommended by the Buddha. And the sixth is to generate a feeling of happiness. Happiness is made of non-happiness elements, like the rose is made of non-rose elements. It's like the lotus is made of non-lotus elements. Without the mud, the lotus cannot be. Of course, you have undergone suffering. But if you know how to make good use of that suffering, you can create happiness. Every time I remember the time I had lung infections, sputum and there is a blood, and it's difficult to enjoy breathing when your lungs are infected. Now the infection is gone. And every time you remember, you enjoy breathing in more. Your lungs now are clean, your lungs now is healthy, and you can enjoy breathing in deeply. So suffering can be useful if you have suffered in the past. That is a kind of mud that you can make use of in order to grow the lotus of happiness of today. And that is the wisdom of Buddha. A skillful practitioner can make good use of his suffering in order to grow happiness. And the sixth exercise is to produce a feeling of happiness. Buddhism is about being happy. If you don't know how to create a feeling of joy and happiness, you are not a good Buddhist. So that is an art, and each practitioner should be an artist, and you should be able to generate a feeling of joy, a feeling of happiness for ourselves, and help the other person to do the same. Darling, remember that way, that time when we suffer. Now we are free. Now there are many conditions of happiness. We can help him or help her to get out of the state of worries and suffering in order to begin to enjoy life. And then when we go to the seventh exercise of mindful breathing, we know that it is possible to handle a feeling of distress, a feeling of pain. Breathing in, I'm aware of the pain in myself, whether that is physical pain or mental pain. It might be sorrow, fear, anger, distress. And a good practitioner should know how to handle his pain, suffering. A good practitioner never tries to suppress his pain or sorrow or anger. Mindfulness helps him to recognize the pain within himself and take good care of that pain. The pain, whether it is despair or anger or fear, is a kind of energy coming up from stored consciousness. And if you are a good practitioner, you don't try to run away from it. If you are not a practitioner, you try to cover it up as if it does not exist. You turn on the television, you turn on the music, you go shopping in order to forget it. But it is always there. But if you are a good practitioner, you don't do that. You don't try to ignore it. You don't try to cover it up. You don't pretend that it's not there. If you are a good practitioner, you know that you have to take care of your pain. And that is the object of the seventh exercise of mindfulness of breathing. Breathing in, I know you are there, my pain, my sorrow, my fear. Breathing out, I will take good care of you. That is the seventh exercise. You recognize the energy of pain, sorrow, fear, anger, and you produce a second source of energy, mindfulness and concentration, by the practice of mindful breathing or walking. And with the second source of mindfulness, you embrace tenderly, you recognize and embrace tenderly the block of pain in you, like a big brother taking care of the younger brother. No fighting. And that is the eighth exercise of mindful breathing, embracing and relieving, appeasing the suffering. Because the big brother is there, there's no reason why for the younger brother to worry. Big brother will take care. So the big brother here is your mindfulness, your concentration, generated by the practice, in order to go home and take care of the pain inside. And you can get a relief after 5-10 minutes of practicing, embracing, recognizing your pain. You get a relief. And if you follow the other, the exercise that come after that, you know how not only to appease it, to calm it, but to try to transform it. So the practice recommended by the Buddha is a very practical, very real, not just philosophy, metaphysics. And then when we know how to listen to the suffering inside, embrace the suffering inside, understanding and compassion will arise in us. And when compassion and understanding arise in us, we begin to heal, to transform. And after that, we can look at the other person and realize that in her, in him, there's a lot of suffering. And we begin to understand, to see the suffering in him or in her. And we do not complain, you not blame him or her anymore. Instead, using our experience, we want to help him or her to suffer less. And when you have compassion in your heart, you are capable to listen to him or to her. And listening like that make him or her suffer less. And you can tell her with loving speech that she can do like you. She can listen to her own suffering. She can allow understanding and compassion to arise in her heart so that she can suffer less, she can heal. And that way you can help her, you can help him. And that is a process of improving a relationship. Restoring communication between you and the other person. But you have always to begin with yourself. And that is the practice that we learn in Plum Village. And after having practice and transform and heal ourselves, we can help others to do the same. The people in our family, our friends, and in society. So every moment of our daily life can be a practice. When you brush your teeth, you can do it mindfully. You can enjoy brushing your teeth. That is meditation. When you go to the restroom, you go to the restroom in such a way that you don't hurry, you just enjoy the time in the restroom. There is a mindfulness concentration while you are in the restroom. When you cook your breakfast, enjoy cooking breakfast. It is possible to generate the energy of joy and happiness while making breakfast. You do it out of love. So every moment of your daily life can be a moment of practice. You don't practice only in the meditation hall. You practice everywhere.